The question, who is Bob Dylan, has always been difficult to answer because he's undergone so many transformations. In the new movie, I'm Not There, screenwriter and director Todd Haynes addresses the question by fragmenting Dylan into six different characters, each representing a different phase of Dylan's life, each played by a different actor. For example, Christian Bale plays Dylan when he was famous for writing and singing protest songs. The Dylan who goes electric is played by actress Cate Blanchett. The young Dylan, who was inspired by Woody Guthrie, is named Woody Guthrie and is portrayed by a young African-American actor named Marcus Carl Franklin. Todd Haynes also made the movies Poison, Safe, Velvet Goldmine, and Far From Heaven. The soundtrack of I'm Not There includes Dylan songs performed by Dylan, as well as new interpretations of his songs by such performers as Cat Power, Eddie Vedder, Yola Tango, and Sonic Youth. Here's Dylan's Ballad of a Thin Man, sung by Stephen Malkmus.
You walk into the room with your pencil in your hand. You see somebody naked. You say, who is that man? You try so hard, but you don't understand just what you will say when you get home. But there's something happening here, and you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones?
Todd Haynes told me he was a Dylan fan in high school and then moved on to other music, but in his 30s he found himself craving Dylan's music again.
This was at a time in my life where I kind of was, I think, hungering for a kind of change. Maybe I didn't even know this yet. And that Dylan, his voice, the kind of fearlessness in that voice, in that music, immediately reminded me of or symbolized that youthful time where change is everything and change is positive and everything in your future is around the corner and to come. And it was in that climate that that I kept exploring the music and reading biographies and getting deeper into it. And this film and this concept of how to approach a film on Dylan emerged out of that.
Well, I'm glad you said that, you know, because a previous movie that you made about music was about glam rock, and that was called Velvet Goldmine. And when you and I spoke about that movie, you were talking about change and a change of identity through clothing in glam rock. And you said that this idea of sexuality is something that you could change, like your costume or your cosmetic style, mm-hmm. is something that you found pretty progressive and that it goes against the natural model for identity and sexuality. And you said it suggests it's in the hands of the young person to decide who they are, to dress up and to try this or that. And you said that distinguishes glam from other rock and roll, which is so much about authenticity and the notion of finding and sticking to who you really are. I thought about that, you know, when watching the Dylan film, because Dylan never stuck to, quote, who he really is. He just has constantly changed who he is, trying on different personalities or putting on different masks or transforming himself. I don't really know what's behind those changes or why he's made them. But is that also what interests you about him, that you know, nothing is permanent in terms of his identity?
It is. And it brings up these questions about identity that I think have been part of all my films. But what's really interesting, and you really hit on it in the question, is that it's subtle, because I think it has very much to do with two different cultures. One, the British kind of irony and the traditions that did put quotation marks around notions of being this or being that, and a lot of it with the wit and the sort of the lead of somebody like Oscar Wilde, who I use as a point of reference in Velvet Goldmine. The funny thing about Dylan is that he completely enters each of these phases, these psychic modes that he explores, utterly. And it's as if it's a I think of him as a consummate performer who lives and dies in the moment of his performance. And that's true for the song he's singing or the identity that he's embodying, either as protest singer or born-again Christian or rock and roller. But just in that same way, when it's over, it's dead. It's utterly finished, and he moves on. And there's this way in which it's this non-reflective mode, this non-analytical mode. It's something where you live completely in the moment that you're performing in, and then you discard it, which has created all kinds of consternation and frustration when Dylan disavows the places that he occupied in the past. But to me, in this funny way, it's an utterly American process at the same time.
Now, what is it about these kinds of transformations and putting the previous characters behind you that you relate to as an artist?
See, I don't really relate to that as an artist. I am an analytical, reflective type. And it goes along with the fact that I'm a filmmaker and not a musician. I don't live in the present with my creative endeavor. I don't share my art in the moment with an audience. I have to, you know, prepare and plan and write and break it down into thousands of components, and then somehow put it all back together. It's the least spontaneous, the least present, one of the least present kind of art forms that there is. And I envy that in musicians. I envy that amazing sense of being in the moment. I do, of course, the idea of shirking off identity and not being defined by it is something that, you know, I guess some people have seen in my films that change style and historical period and even, you know, structural or you know, referential aspects, you know, over time. And that does keep me invigorated as an artist. But it's much more self-conscious. It's much more based on things that interest me socially and culturally and politically, whereas Dylan's, I don't think, have that kind of self-consciousness.
Well, you have six different actors playing six different sides of Dylan's personality that he has embodied over the years. Why did you want to break it down that way?
I just felt that this idea of Dylan as somebody as a kind of shapeshifter, somebody who for whom change is the only constant, maybe, is something that I just kept confronting in everything I was returning to in this period of rediscovery of Dylan and his music, whether it was biographies or testimonies of Dylan. People around him during the 60s who would literally say, I saw him on, you know, Friday and he was this one guy. And I saw him 4 months later and he's speaking differently, looking differently, sounding differently. It's a completely different specimen right in front of my eyes. And certainly those times were moving so fast already, you know, and he was part of that time and swept up into it and absorbing it at an incredible rate. But he always seemed to be also a few steps ahead of that. To me, that was getting to the core of something about him. And I just thought that should be the dramatic structure of this film. That should be the experiment and the excitement of this film, is to literally splinter him into different people and let them have different stories and let each story have a different stylistic treatment, all kind of coming out of 60s cinema and 60s sensibility, but completely distinct from one to the next.
You have Cate Blanchett playing the electric Dylan, and you call her Jude, I think probably because some of his folk fans thought of him as a Judas once he went electric at Newport. But having a woman play Dylan makes it seem like you think that Dylan had a really androgynous side. And I'm wondering, do you? I guess I never thought that about him, but do you think that he has an androgynous side?
I think in this particular period, this very short-lived period from the time he plugged in electric toward the end of 65 to which followed and then went on the electric tour in England through 66 and then which ended with the crashing of his motorcycle that the summer of 66, that this very specific time he was yet again in a different physical form. And what you see, and you see this in Scorsese's documentary No Direction Home, that has a lot of footage that D.A. Pennybaker shot the year after he did his great documentary Don't Look Back, And it's a different Dylan. It's a dandified, kind of high-speed, electric body with the biggest hair and the skinniest body and this inability to stand still and these weirdly eccentric gestures that hand gestures that are kind of, you know, these flourishes to his piano playing or his speaking. And I was just like, this is 1965, you know, in America when this was first unleashed on the public, backed by this loud, fairly bombastic electric band, which was the band behind him. And what a shock it must have been. I mean, it's an androgyny that is not necessarily about the kind of glamorous androgyny that David Bowie would exhibit in the early 70s. It's almost this like lesbian androgyny that you'd see in Patti Smith, you know, 10 years after Dylan was doing this. But there's something dangerous about it and completely spidery and unfamiliar looking, you know, and I just felt it had to be that moment of Dylan, which is also so famous, and we've seen the images so many times over, needed to be kind of, you know, infused with an extra level of shock and strangeness.
My guest is Todd Haynes, the director and co-writer of I'm Not There. Let's hear Cate Blanchett portraying the electric Dylan in a scene from the film. She's in a car responding to questions from a journalist.
Do you think it's the process itself that's at fault?
Who cares what I think? I'm not the president. I'm just a storyteller, man. That's all I am.
Well, I presume at the very least that you care something about what you sing every night.
How can I answer that if you got the nerve to ask me?
Do you know, I am convinced of one thing. You either do truly care about nothing at all, or tremendously much that people think so.
And you ask for my time?
Mr. Quinn, we really do need you.
Listen,
in...
I know more about you, right, than you will ever know about me. Slaughter me for all I care. I refuse to be hurt.
You're the first person to actually get rights from Dylan to use his music. And the soundtrack for the movie includes Dylan's versions of some of his songs, but there's also a lot of covers. So I know you met with Dylan's oldest son, and Dylan's son got permission from his father. What's your guess about
actually,
what...
That-
Do I have that wrong?
I should correct that. Yeah, we met with Jesse Dylan and Jeff Rosen, Dylan's manager, was in that on the phone in that meeting, and it was all Jeff's process. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, what was it? Do you have any idea that got Dylan to say yes to you when he hasn't said yes before?
I really don't. I had no information or none of the specifics about it except that he saw this one sheet description that I'd written up about the concept and was sent some of my films on DVD. And he called Jeff Rose and his manager a couple months later and said, "You like these guys? Let's give them the rights." But I can only imagine that the only thing Dylan would have said yes to would be something, you know, unorthodox, something that was not reductive, that wouldn't, try to put his whole narrative into a single box and resolve it for the world. And I kind of, you know, I think it would have to be something irreverent and with a sense of humor. I think the thing he kind of is probably the most tired of is worship. And being put on a pedestal. And this film has a lot of different shades of this character all in one and is playful, ultimately.
You know, the theme of your movie, which we've been talking about, is Dylan's transformations and how that relates to, like, authenticity or acting, you know, method acting or, you know, honesty or whatever. Have you always known who you were? Has your, like, sense of identity shifted over the years, consciously or unconsciously, you know, has it been fixed or not?
It's an interesting question. I mean, because it's this commitment to identity as something that's sort of imposed on us by society that can make questions about sexuality and expressions of ethnic identity, you know, fraught and much more subject to struggle, have been themes in all of my films. But I also feel extremely fortunate in that I was raised in this kind of climate of love and encouragement by parents who still support my work and my films and the risks that I take. And I think it gave me a really solid sense of those possibilities that I could explore, you know, myself creatively, and I could trust that. And I think it's always been something that I've demonstrated, I guess, in my life, from being a very young kid who was obsessively, you know, a maker of things, a painter or a little actor or something, and soon a young filmmaker. But and yet I really am drawn to those places of fragility and mutability and the instability that people feel every day. You know, I do think, though, like one thing that was helpful is, like, I do look back on different parts of my life as if I was different people with different ideas and different kind of, you know, mottos. And it's almost like when, you know, when relationships end in your life and we're sort of told, many people feel like, oh, all those 7 years that I spent with this one person was a waste. And, you know, somehow I made a mistake and somehow my life went in a wrong direction. And I do think that this idea of thinking of yourself, allowing yourself to be different people at different times, means that you can accept all those choices and that is not invalid. The times we spend with certain people, we needed to do so and we learn something from it. We always do. And even some of the hardest times give us amazing, you know, gifts and discoveries or whatever. And that is something that I feel that this example Dylan sets is something that is so, that can be really positive and really healthy.
Todd Haynes, thanks so much for talking with us.
It's a pleasure, Terry. Thank you.
Todd Haynes directed and co-wrote the film I'm Not There. You can download podcasts of our show by going to our website, freshair.npr.org.